Good evening, folks. This is John Johnson. It is Wednesday at 8 o'clock. It's the 9th of April, and this is Radio Edutalk. I'm sitting in Glasgow in Scotland, and tonight we are joined by guest Miles Berry. And I'm ashamed to say, Miles, I'm not exactly sure where you're sitting at the moment geographically. I know it's south of the border, but...
It is indeed. I'm sitting in my dining room in Godalming, which is southwest of London.
Right. Godalming, Surrey, I believe, if it'd come it. After, yep. after Godalming. Brilliant. And we're here to dig into the English computing curriculum, which there's been a deal of change and lots of interesting news on... And I wonder if you could just start by telling us a wee bit about your background, your history and education, and where you are now.
Well, it's a pleasure to do this. Thank you ever so much for inviting me. I've spent 18 years teaching across four different schools. Started off in secondary mathematics, but moved into the primary phase relatively early on. Much of that time I've been there as an ICT coordinator, but also running the network as well as writing the curriculum for that side of things. And then finally, 3 years as a primary school head teacher, which folks listening to this won't be able to tell, is semi-prematurely grey. I'm not quite as old as I look, although rapidly approaching that point. But about 4 or 5 years ago now, I made the move into teacher training. So I'm working at the University of Roehampton, training the next generation of outstanding teachers. I sit on the board of NACE, which is the ICT Subject Association, and Computing at School, which is the Subject Association for Computer Science, and was also part of the teams that drafted the new computing curriculum for English schools as expert advice to the Department for Education. Most of our recommendations they accepted, and then we went through a sort of couple of phases of tweaking those until the final version was published last September, and we're going live with that across the nation's schools come September 2014.
Brilliant. And just a word to our listeners, if you're listening and you want to join in, you can join in by tweeting. It'd be a good idea if you use the hashtag Edutalk, EDUTALK. You could always tweet at mberry, MBERRY, or at John Johnson as well. But the Edutalk hashtag, we will try and follow and pick up. Miles, you sound as if you've had a fascinating career. I'm quite interested in the move from secondary to primary and how that felt, but that's maybe another time. But just sort of,
I have my 3-year-old here in the background, so
that's fine.
She's all fascinated by this. Anyhow, yes, the move from secondary to primary. I found myself teaching, you know, both A level and at the bottom end of the secondary age range, and was enjoying that very much. So, in fact, back in 1993, made a move to middle school education, sort of teaching across that divide. There's an element of truth in the old thing about, you know, secondary school teachers teach subjects, mathematics, computing, whatever, whereas primary school teachers teach children. And that's slightly more holistic view as to what education is, was something which really did appeal to me, and I think has continued to appeal to me through the intervening years.
Brilliant. And I think there's a move across stages now to think about educating children. Certainly in Scotland here, we're moving to the Curriculum for Excellence, where things like literacy and numeracy are a responsibility of all.
Yes.
That sort of points towards what you're talking about.
And, you know, when one thinks about the ICT curriculum as well as the computing curriculum, as it will be, there are so many opportunities for linking that to other areas of study and to find meaningful examples within other aspects of the curriculum to look at the applications of some of these ideas of computer science, of computational thinking, and indeed of good old-fashioned information technology across the curriculum. And I think primary school teachers have, you know, something of a head start when it comes to that, but that's not to say that wouldn't be a really very interesting way of approaching it up in secondary education too.
Yeah, I think the nervousness there is usually, and this is the challenge as we go into the Curriculum for Excellence, is that there's that you've still got subject exams at the end of your secondary career. So, Miles, for people who are not in England, obviously there's been a fair bit of publicity about the new computing curriculum. I guess starting a wee while ago when Michael Gove mentioned coding as the new Latin.
I think that's actually Ian Livingstone who coined that particular phrase. One of the great heroes of the games industry. Back to the days of Fighting Fantasy adventure books and White Dwarf magazines, but as one of the people who've made the UK games industry what it is, this sense of coding as providing that sort of formal approach to thinking about problems, to expressing oneself creatively. What an interesting error of the curriculum. But yes, absolutely, coding is the new Latin. There are a number of rationales we can give for why this switch from the old ICT curriculum, which focused perhaps more than anything else on a collection of skills of being able to use software, creatively, to use it effectively, independently and confidently, none of which is a bad thing, I'd hasten to add, to one which is much more focused on a knowledge of the ideas of computer science and an understanding of those fundamental principles that lie at the heart of not only digital technology, but also computer science as a way of thinking about and understanding the world around us. So, yeah, as I say, a number of rationales there, one of which, of course, is the sort of economic argument around UK PLC, that in order for us to maintain our vibrant industry in this field, the games industry, the visual effects industry, the software industry, and indeed the broader IT industry, it's necessary to have folk studying these subjects in university. And in order to have good folk studying the subjects at university, you want people leaving school being enthused and interested in these subjects. For me, I think that's all well and good, but there are other more, at least equally persuasive arguments, one of which is this notion of what it means to be educated, this idea of a liberal education, that we don't teach poetry or music or art because our country needs more poets or musicians or artists, but because an all-round liberal education includes an understanding of these ideas and the experience of being able to express yourself in those domains. And I'd say the same is true of programming, of coding, if you will, of computer science, that this day and age, given the role which digital technology plays in all of our lives, to only be able to use that without understanding the ideas that underpins it seems to me to be an impoverished and unbalanced and not sufficiently broad education. Other arguments apply too, this notion that it is something, a fundamental science. It's the zeroth science, if you will, more fundamental even than physics. And that actually, as well as the vibrant UK software industry, etc., we also want people in all sorts of roles who have an understanding of computation and an understanding of how software gets made. It's more, the more people who have those insights, the better use we're likely to make of technology and the better opportunities we'll have for deploying that stuff. And finally, I'd say that if we are preparing our pupils for a future which we only have a very vague glimpse of what that's likely to involve, then it seems to me, and I think to most of us, that digital technology, that computers are going to play an ever-increasing role in that. And so some understanding of the fundamental unchanging principles of that seems far more important than, if you'll allow me, being able to send a text on a PowerPoint slide.
Right. That just sounds a really powerful and persuasive argument for moving coding into school, or moving computer science and computational thinking into school across the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could, explain what are the curricular and timetabling implications of this for the different stages in English education. And
okay, it's worth saying that because of the way education in the UK has been devolved, this does only apply to English schools, and because of other changes that apply to English schools. This only applies to some English schools. The schools which have already become academies, the new free schools and the independent sector have no obligation to follow any of this curriculum. I think we set it as a benchmark, and there's an expectation that the curriculum in such schools will at least be as good as that which the national curriculum provides as an entitlement for pupils in local authority maintained schools. That said, the national curriculum doesn't go into the detail of how much time should be set aside for things, and you know the Secretary is prohibited from legislating as to how much time needs to be set aside for a subject. I think it's going to be hard to do it justice in less than an hour a week, but that needn't, certainly not in the primary phase at any rate, needn't be timetabled as computing on the timetable. As I said earlier, there's some really interesting ways of embedding this across the curriculum. I think the expectations for Key Stage 3 are much more ambitious, and there's an awful lot of really very detailed coming at this from a primary perspective, relatively sophisticated ideas to cover during Key Stage 3. That said, although we have computing there as an expectation for Key Stage 4, the entitlement there is a very open one, which I think would lend itself to being embedded across the GCSE choices which pupils make at that point. But yeah, even at Key Stage 4, there should be the opportunity to study for further qualifications, certainly to continue studying both computer science and information technology, if the pupil and the school, well, certainly if the pupils choose to do so and have the aptitude for doing so.
So, at primary level, what sort of age are we starting to think in this way? Think about this.
But we start at year one, so at the age of five, and there have been a number of media headlines about children programming from the age of five. Truth be told, programming has been on the national curriculum, including at Key Stage 1, right from its start. You know, I can find you a link to the 1990 national curriculum orders, which have had programming on there. And when our friends at Ofsted went and looked at what ICT was happening in school, in Key Stage 1, they weren't at all worried about the programming, because you had teachers doing really interesting things using the little floor turtles, the BeeBots and the Romas and things like that, as the first initial steps of writing computer programs. The expectations increase over the subsequent key stages, but it builds on that foundation of writing programs, of implementing algorithms on the digital device. We deliberately, in the programme of study for Key Stage 1, said digital device. If we'd said computer, people would have immediately thought of coding things on screen, and, you know, those lovely illustrations you get of the Matrix of green letters on a background. That's not what was in our mind when it was the Key Stage 1 programme of study. I think, you know, by the end of Key Stage 1, a child might be ready to move on from working with the BeeBot or the Roma, and there are some lovely programming toolkits out there. We can chat about resources if you'd like in a bit. The difference is not so much the programming as the thinking about the programming. For me, I see programming as a two-step process. You have the algorithm and then you have the code. You have the thinking about how you're going to solve the problem, and then implementing that in a particular formal language on a particular operating system, bit of hardware, digital device, platform, whatever we're going to call that. And it's the first part, which is now something which we're focusing on a lot more in the programmes of study than we were perhaps in the previous versions, where we were interested in, you know, writing the sequences of instructions in one language or another. This time, we're focusing much more on developing this cluster of competences, concepts, skills, if you will, that we're labelling as computational thinking. It's thinking about problems in a way that you can get a computer to help you solve them as much as anything else.
So do you think, I mean, to me that would seem the most important part, because any of the learning, any sort of coding in their school life today, it's fairly likely, I would have thought, that if they go on to work in the industry, for instance, they'll be using a completely different operating system, a completely different coding language.
I tend to take the view that primary school is a little too early for vocational training.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the ideas are ones which, if they're taught well and with that sense of the principles that underpin them, which the ideas are ones which will transfer from one particular programming language to another, I think, very readily. So you have this sort of sense of progression of working with the concrete operational, pressing the buttons on the floor turtle and watching what the floor turtle does. In fact, even before that, you have, you know, children acting out their own sequence in this. I'm sure many of us will have taught the lesson of telling children to walk 10 steps forward, turn right, three quarter of a turn, and so on, and so, you know, behaving as the floor turtle themselves. And then we move on to the graphical programming languages, the writing programs by putting blocks of code together in much the same way as we might build something by fitting blocks of Lego together. And then I'd suggest in secondary school we then make the move to a slightly more abstract version of programming where, yes, we are typing commands at the keyboard. Okay, if you really want to do it old school, by all means use a green font on a black background there. Now, having to remember at that point where to put the colons, where to put the semicolons and the funny old curly brackets and so on, I'd rather not see too much of that sort of
thing in primary school. Yeah.
Text-based programming happening down in the primary phase, because I think for many children the remembering the commands is going to get in the way of the thinking about the ideas. You know, I come back to what I said earlier, it is really the ideas which matter at primary school. That said, the ideas are made much more concrete through writing programs with Scratch, with Bebot, than just thinking about the ideas on their own. I think the practical experience does matter.
So in the primary, we say we concentrate on physical devices, programming those, controlling modelling, moving on to visual sort of things like Scratch.
Scratch is such a good example of Key Stage 2. It really is. And there's some super resources out there. If you have a look at what's happening in the Scratch web community at scratch.mit.edu, the sort of programs which young people have written just with the toolkit and with very little by way of formal scaffolded instruction from anybody, it's just amazing to see. It really is.
I mean, I think that the one of the things is this idea for children learning from each other to a certain extent is valuable in there. Learning from watching videos that they make themselves and learning from unpicking other people's
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, alongside the sort of formal definition of computational thinking as being about abstraction and decomposition and algorithms and logic and patterns or generalization, I think you've also got that sense of the approaches that computer programmers, computer scientists, software engineers take, one of which is going to be tinkering, is looking at the code that other people have written and learning from that. You probably know that a lot of my sort of earlier experience of ICT and education was around the open source deployment, where that approach of looking at how somebody else has solved a problem, learning from that and basing your solution on theirs with a few tweaks to it, it's very much the way into those communities as legitimate peripheral participation. And yeah, the making culture that you have in activities in this space beyond the curriculum is something I'd love to see happening in the curriculum too. And we have strong precedent for that. We go back, you know, the book on this was written by Seymour Papert back in the 1980s. You know, Mindstorms and this idea of constructionism, and we learn best by making things to show to other people. Of course, we've been doing that in our ICT lessons in the past, but let's also be doing that as we move forward into exciting times with computing.
So we know the sort of shape that I'm still kind of sticking to the primaries at the moment, the shape that this will go in, and I'm getting it that some teachers are obviously welcoming this with open arms because they've already been involved in this sort of thing through a diverse set of interests and ways. But how well do you think that the profession as a whole is ready for this across the primary school?
a good question, John. I thought you said you weren't going to throw me any difficult questions.
I don't think there's a reflection on anybody at that question. It's just
there are interesting factors at play here. I think there is some of the media coverage has kind of created the impression that this is all really, really difficult and you can't possibly expect primary school children to be able to program computers. And that really hasn't helped because, as I say, that's been on the curriculum for a long time. In Key Stage 1, it's been happening really, really well. And the sort of tools which we have out there make this very, very accessible. That said, if you look at the sort of thing which happens in many a school ICT lesson, it all too often has boiled down to go and find something out on the internet and make a presentation about it or type it up with some notes. And I think that's mainly because finding things out on the web, using word processors, using presentation programs, is the sort of thing which many a primary school teacher does day in, day out. It's the sort of use of IT with which they feel very confident and very familiar. Relatively few in the profession have much experience writing software, and down in the primary phase, it's not something which most teachers do day in, day out. It's a new thing. For them. We are talking about bright people, though. We're talking about people who understand learning. I think many of the profession have retained a passion for learning new things. So I certainly don't see this as an insurmountable challenge, but it is a challenge because we have a Secretary of State who's asking us to teach something which many of us ourselves have never been taught. There are loads of resources out there to draw on to learn about this, but in order to do that, you kind of need the time as well as the interest. And whilst, you know, it would have been lovely to have had a little more time for teachers
to ramp up,
to master these new ideas, this new body of knowledge out there. We're seeing some super CPD initiatives being developed. So Computing at Schools has this network of excellence with teachers working with other teachers. We'd very much like to get a few more primary practitioners signing up for this role as a Computing at School master teacher. You have the British Computer Society's Barefoot Computing project, which I'm involved with, and we're developing sort of exemplar teaching resources as part of that. And you have Code Club Pro growing out of the Code Club movement of getting, you know, people from the industry working in school, running after school clubs for children, and now leveraging that network to get people with some background in IT going and working with teachers and developing teachers' subject knowledge. So there are, and announced on Monday, Microsoft funding Computing at Schools to run courses for, I think the figure is 50,000 primary and secondary school teachers around exactly this territory. So there are initiatives, but it's finding the time and the motivation for teachers to master this content. Certainly not insurmountable, but a little bit more sort of space and time to do that might not have been an entirely bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite difficult to take something new on that's out with your sort of realm of experience. And one of it's obviously a wealth of resources out there, but one of the problems for somebody who is coming to this new is to winnow down the resources to the ones that they're going to be able to do in a reasonable amount of time and get success from, you know, if you're presented with a lot of different choices.
Just sidetrack. There is this lovely study out there of, you know, if people are presented with a choice of 6 different jams, they're very, very happy. A choice of 24 different jams, they become significantly more confused by this. It's the resource discovery problem, isn't it? The curated list of content, of ideas, of resources is, I think, a really important thing to do. We've been doing some of this work under originally Teaching Agency, now National College of Teaching Leadership auspices, on our little Google site. It's bit.ly/ITTComp. of curating some of the resources that are out there, computing at schools doing a very similar sort of job. And you are starting to see commercial schemes of work being developed to help with exactly this. So I've been working on the Rising Stars Switched On computing scheme, and you're seeing similar commercial schemes of work coming out from other publishers too now, which is no real surprise.
So, and I can see, again, I can see you talked about down the what we saw down the school, and maybe there's an interesting discussion around why we say down the school. Hopefully just it's to do with the size of the pupils rather than anything else, because very often there's really exciting practice, I think, even down in nursery school, or especially down in nursery school.
Young children climbing lots and lots of flights of stairs to get to their classroom. That's all I was implying.
Yeah. No, I use down the school all the time. But when I was a teacher, I was always, for a part of my career, trying to get down the school, and always kind of being pushed back up, possibly. A lack of phonic skills may have been something to do with that. But I can see that somebody coming who didn't know anything about programming, been able to very easily pick up a Bebop kit or something like that and pick it up. And at upper primary, with a bit of study, and there is plenty of help picking up something like Scratch.
Yes.
And I know there's a few different bits of software around the sort of Scratch idea of blocks. Some of them are coming out in tablets as well, which is quite interesting, because I think that idea of manipulating blocks with your fingers is quite interesting.
Something which my 3-year-old does all of the time with physical building blocks.
Yeah.
It's just going to be a matter of time before she's working with Scratch Junior or something like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, and as I say, I think the tablet can maybe come in there. And when, again, those things that sort of appeal to, I think, generalists, primary school teachers, rather than specialists. Now, when we get into the secondary school, is it going to be computing teachers or ICT teachers that are going to deliver this?
Yeah, I think this is a real challenge. There are certainly folks teaching in secondary education with an impressive set of qualifications in computer science or experience as software developers, software engineers out in industry. There are also a large number of people in secondary education who've been teaching ICT with no background themselves in programming or in computer science. Again, the upskilling or up-knowledging, I think I've just invented a word there, is not insurmountable, but it does need time. It does need the motivation to learn a new body of knowledge there. In terms of practical implementation in the classroom, I think for September, the keeping one step ahead of your class maybe enough the first time round. I'm particularly interested in this field of agile software development, and one of the things you have in agile is this notion of the minimum viable product, and I think for this September that might well be enough that we get something which is working for September, but then we refactor, we improve on that. We go through a process of iterative development of, yes, this lesson, these resources, this unit of work really well. This needs some more attention. So, this is a whole new ball game.
Yeah.
Many, many in secondary education. But, Key Stage 3 is meant to take 3 years, and so getting 1 year working and working well is enough for the first year, and let's build on that and let's develop that. And the program of study for Key Stage 3, yes, it is ambitious, but the programming requirement says at least 2 languages, at least one of which must be textual, that Scratch is allowed in Key Stage 3. I think over a period of time, it would be unwise to focus too much on scratching PlayStation 3, as we have done quite a lot of that.
Yeah.
But as you say, there are some really nice block-based alternatives out there. And, you know, if we want to mention them now, that, you know, things like Snap, Build Your Own Blocks, and Star Logo TNG is lovely, and Blockly has some interesting territory, and App Inventor, fabulous for putting together your own Android mobile phone app. And there's some lovely work from CDI Apps for Good around that whole process of developing an app for a tablet or a mobile device. So not just the programming bit of that. And I think it's easy to focus on what's new in the new programmer study and to not pay enough attention to the other elements of it. Yes, there's the new computer science bits. Yes, there's more of a focus on programming. But there's also some really important and really ambitious elements of information technology and digital literacy in there as well. And it comes back to ensuring that our students do have a broad and balanced education and a computing curriculum which focused merely on learning how to program. I don't think we'd offer that.
Yeah, I think probably we need some sort of link to why you're doing this. And the apps for the future thing fits very well. In the last, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had somebody, Louise Jones from the Highland region, who was mentioning that some kids up there had won a competition, which unfortunately I can't remember. But
that's Apps for Good. I'm fairly certain that's
with the cattle counting app or something like this. But it was an app for farmers. It's in production now to use to
be limited marketing in the city, Glasgow. Yeah. But something like that is going to be really important.
Yeah, it'd be different. Obviously not that interested in counting cows here, but once you get out in the country, there's plenty, and you know, there's obvious room to develop that idea and take in sheep and pigs and all that. But I imagine
the same project, Apps for Good, down here, one of the schools that are taking part, they came out with this brilliant thing of checking the balance on your Oyster card, you know, using this publicly available API for the Transport for London smart ticket thing. You've got children working in a secondary school who've developed an app for other children to manage their Oyster card balances. And it's lovely to see that practical application of these computing and indeed information technology ideas. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed to me just more interesting that there's some point to it rather than just getting the right donut out of the code editor at the end, you know.
But I mean, that is explicit in the programme of study. That, you know, at Key Stage 2, we have this idea designing, writing, debugging programs that accomplish specific goals. At Key Stage 3, you've got modelling the state and behaviour of real world problems, physical systems. And designing, developing modular programs to meet particular requirements. And this notion of there's a purpose to the programming is something which I think we have built into the program study. And I'm optimistic that we're going to see that made real come September when this becomes the statutory requirement.
And it actually kicks off and people have got to really make sure they're ticking the boxes and things from September. And kids, and again in the upper school, do you think an hour a week is going to sort of pan out to be a reasonable expectation, or do you think it's
more flexible? Yes, you know, I come back to this idea of let's just get something working for this September and then make it better.
Yeah,
but you know, in 5 years' time, you'll have children joining secondary school who'll have 5 years of computing experience behind them from the primary phase, or obviously that's going to stand them in very good stead for hitting the ground running with something really quite ambitious when it comes to what they're going to do during Key Stage 3. I worry a little that come September of this year there'll be children joining secondary school who won't have done much programming during their time at primary school, who certainly won't have done much computer science or computational thinking. or being taught much of that at their time in primary school. So a Key Stage 3 program study, which makes the assumption that you've been taught everything on the Key Stage 1 and 2 program study, becomes even more ambitious for the first time round, and I think for the first few times round. But we'll get there, we really will. You know, it isn't just for next year. This is something which we will build up to. And, you know, you've got to make the change. No, you don't have to, but I think we were right to make the change. And yes, one can argue about phasing that in and providing a longer run-up to it. But better to hit the ground running and get something really ambitious there and then rise to meet those expectations, in my book.
Well, that certainly sounds an exciting way to do a project.
There's one word for it.
and challenging. You mentioned earlier that you're involved in NAIS. And
yes.
Up here in sunny Scotland, there's a digital creativity program that's been supported to some extent by NAIS, and it's in, as I understand, and I don't understand all that well, I'm hoping to have Kate Farrell on EduTalk point to give us some more details about that. But as I understand it, it's seeing programming as one in a range of sort of digitally creative activities that maybe the sort of thing that the sort of outcomes we're looking from for teaching children coding could, in some cases and for some children, be addressed by other means, by say, you know, graphic art or sort of idea, or making in the sort of breadboard type. Flashing lights stuff and robots, says he glibly.
Absolutely. I mean, the creativity, I think, is a hugely important thing that schools ought to be. It's not equipping their pupils to do. Of course it isn't, because they start as creative individuals in my book. I know people will disagree with me on that one, but we want to encourage, develop, allow that to flourish during their time at school. And that creativity can be across a whole range of media, of course it should, much of which these days is going to be in the digital domain. And there's some really interesting overlap between working in digital media and the computer science ideas. Google is sponsoring or co-sponsoring this lovely dev art exhibition that's going to be on at the Barbican, of looking at computational approaches to art. Mm-hmm. My colleague Pete Kemp at Roehampton, working with sixth formers during the summer on 3D animation. And of course that brings in a lot of the sort of artistic side of working in digital media, but there's also some really interesting coding underlying that. And if you look at the history of how we've got to where we are with the English curriculum, the contribution of Ian Livingston from the games industry, Alex Hope from the visual effects industry, and the NextGen report. And it's not just computer science, it's also art. They talk in the digital creative industries of T-shaped individuals. Yes, you have a very solid core of the essential competences, but also a whole broad range of talents and creative skills on which you can draw in a very multidisciplinary sort of way. And I think, you know, that's one of the lovely things about the primary curriculum, that we get to do.
You can do that. Yeah.
But it's also the best secondary education is making those, or some of the best secondary education is making those connections between what could all too easily be seen as separate disciplines.
And I wonder too if people, I mean, and I imagine there's a few, maybe three or four, sort of naysayers about this, that saying it's too much and all the rest of it. And I've just dug a quote up that I found today on the internet, which is, "Perhaps the greatest of all pedagogical fallacies is the notion that a person learns only the particular thing he is studying at the time."
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it's from something called guerrilla pedagogy. But I just thought that,
is that gorilla or gorilla? If you see what
it's gorilla, as in, okay. As in, not the hairy ones, the ones with berries.
Massive. But absolutely, yes. And, you know, there are so many things. You started by asking me about my background, and I immediately assumed you meant post-university. But so much of my own primary education I do keep coming back to. And, you know, I was at school at the time when we'd spend Thursday afternoons doing our own individual, independent research projects. This was Google 20% time, when it was only 10% back in those days, of choosing what we wanted to learn about. And that approach is something which I think has coloured much of my educational and indeed professional experience ever since, and so many opportunities for that, that, yeah, a little bit more choice over the sorts of things which we study and the sorts of things which we learn about through what our friends are studying. No bad thing.
Yeah, and I realise time is marching on as it usually does, but earlier on, and this is straying off the computational topic, yep, a wee bit, you mentioned that a lot of your earlier work was to do with open source.
Yeah,
and I wonder if you could speak up to that a wee bit.
There's certainly overlap. As I said, much of my time as an ICT coordinator, I was also sort of running the networks, and we didn't have lots of money to slosh around buying lots and lots of lovely things, and yet still wanted to do lots of lovely things. And so came open source as the very low cost solution to many of the problems which I was encountering. And so, you know, yes, wanted to run sort of client server networks, but the notion of finding the budget lines in which we could move to that sort of approach from a peer-to-peer network, this was a long time ago, I hasten to add, John, was out of the question, really. So going with Linux and a lovely tool called Samba, which lets you run Windows, lets Windows computers access directories on a Linux server, as first steps into open source, and then doing lots of interesting work with Moodle back in the days when virtual learning environments were interesting, as I say, a while ago now, because we didn't have to spend money setting that up. We didn't need budgetary approval to put something like that in place. But then, because it's open source, because I've got access to the source code there, tweaking it and learning a lot about how, you know, a big piece of software like Moodle, like a virtual learning environment, fits together. So that sort of being able to access the source code, I think, is one of the contributory factors to my present enthusiasm for teaching children about programming and other aspects of computer science. And it's fair to say, a lot of the tools for the new curriculum are in that free/open source space. And, you know, something like Scratch has the open source idea of learning from other people's coding absolutely at its heart. And, you know, it's easy to look at Scratch and think the coolest thing about this is being able to program by moving building blocks around. It isn't. The coolest thing about Scratch is the little share button at the top right, of being able to upload not only the game program, whatever, that you've made, but the code that you've put together to make that into this global community, and to participate in that community and learn, as you said earlier, from one another in that space. I'm very excited about that. I think that's this.
Yeah. I mean, I think we would be.
You get the same thing with other lovely products. So, you know, for example, Kodu, for example, Microsoft's Touch Develop, all have this same idea of you can share your project not only as a playable game or as a usable app, but also being able to see the code that's been put together to make that, and then, as they're calling it, remix that to make something different, to take that code and apply it to a different sort of problem.
Yeah, we've talked, I think, a couple of times on the radio to Doug Belshaw, who's involved in Mozilla, and remix at the heart. And I wonder if there's something that education can learn in general from this open remix culture. that's going on, in not just in coding, but in other areas of the curriculum?
I think you see it particularly, I think, in the computing at schools community, but it's there on the TES website as well, of teachers being really very generous with the resources which they've spent time putting together. We most of us are kind, generous, warm-hearted people, only too happy to share our ideas, our insights with fellow professionals. I tend to see, you know, this notion of continuing professional development more in terms of the continuing development of the profession. And yes, at the moment we're particularly focused on acquiring a whole new body of knowledge around computer science. But this is actually, if you step back, about making the teaching profession a more knowledgeable, a more advanced profession. It's not about acquiring a set of skills in how to teach Scratch. Or at least I really hope it's not that.
So, and this is going back to our original topic, you're working in a teacher training institute, or and how is that approaching the change in the curriculum?
Roehampton, we've been doing the whole coding thing for, since before my time there. My predecessor, Grant Alderton, was hugely influential in terms of looking at the good old-fashioned logo approach to programming, micro worlds. So that's been part of the programs that I took over when I started at Roehampton. You know, there's a long heritage there since well before my time. But yeah, we have. Sorry, I'm going to get into boring levels of detail unless you stop.
I think it's really fascinating.
So we have the generalist program of everybody who... I only work in the primary phase. My colleague Pete Kemp is dealing with our secondary PGC. So on the primary phase, we have an undergraduate and postgraduate program. The undergraduate program, we have this sort of big generalist pathway, and everybody learns to do some Scratch programming as part of that. We also address the other really important new aspects of the curriculum. So we talk about algorithms, and we talk about how the internet works, and we have them making digital video as part of the assessed component on other courses. We have them making websites as part of their professional studies expectations. We also have the specialist pathway of folks who are choosing to specialise in computing education, and we start in year one with this lovely creativity and computing course, which combines both elements of that, and they also will do more programming later. They'll look at setting up web-based communities and facilitating web-based communities, and look at some of the bigger issues in terms of helping develop the professional skills, the knowledge of their colleagues in the schools where they eventually find themselves working. On the PGC program, it's a relatively rapid coverage in terms of subject knowledge. So yes, we do lots of the using technology to enhance learning across the curriculum, which is something our trainees are really very keen that they have before they go into school. We address a lot of the e-safety, e-responsibility issues, but also as part of that program, we're dealing with the elements, pardon me, of the new curriculum. So yes, we have all of them writing programs or doing little BBOT activities if they're going to specialise in early years, Key Stage 1. And we also address algorithms. We also address developing for the web, writing HTML as part of that program too.
Right, that sounds great. And I love the idea that these people will be going in to share what they've learned with teachers.
Seems already whilst they're still training, a number of them who, yeah, particularly the computing specialists, will go into schools really fired up about particularly Scratch and run after school coding clubs, programming clubs for some of their pupils, as well as teaching it as part of their lessons. The sense of Wenger talks about this notion of legitimate peripheral participation, and if we do agree with the Secretary of State, nobody's going to be listening to this, are they? Teaching is a craft and best learned through a process of something akin to apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. And that sense of, you know, being able to do something from a relatively early stage. You know, it's not you go in and merely watch others teach. You are actually doing at least part of the job of a teacher from, you know, the first days when you're placed in school. And certainly some of our trainees take that idea absolutely to heart and do some really lovely work whilst they're still training with us. It's lovely to see that aspect of the partnership. It really is.
Brilliant. So I think we're now running up to the hour mark, miles of our half hour. So it's been completely fascinating. It's really great to hear you. It's great to hear.
Have the chat, John. It really has. Thank you so much. Sorry, I'm waffled on.
Oh no. I think it's good. You know, it's great to hear such a positive look at something that is so exciting, and perhaps a wee bit challenging. So can I just say thanks very much for being here.
My pleasure. Really has been.
To listeners, we'll be back next week on Thursday, where David will be talking on the Professional Learning for Teachers channel to Mike Brown from Dumfries and Galloway. The Thursday after that, we've got a keynote by Donald Gillis, who's new head of School of Education at the University of West of Scotland, who's going to be talking about the differences between current educational policies in England and Scotland. So that'll be interesting. And one I think you'd be interested in after that, the Wednesday at the end of April, we've got Lorna Campbell talking about Open Scotland. And this is, I think, openness in its widest, from open source to open culture to open data to open standards. So hopefully that'll be an exciting show. There's plenty more to listen to if you go to edutalk.cc, folks. Can I just round up again by saying a huge thanks to Miles. I've certainly learned tons, had lots to think about, and enjoyed myself thoroughly. So thank you very much. And for everybody else who's listening, either to the live show or the podcast, thanks for listening. You can always keep in touch by tweeting at EduTalker or hashtag EduTalk. So good night.